This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We had planned to talk today about health care and whether private insurers are the problem. We'll reschedule that conversation for another day. Stay tuned. On July 4th, several websites in the United States and South Korea began to stall and then slow down. Thousands of computers in both countries have been hit by cyber attacks. South Korea reported another round of attacks today. In this country, most attacked websites are up and running. U.S. sources say the interference was on a small scale, and while the origins of the attacks can't be identified for certain, suspicion centers on North Korea. Later this hour, movie villains you love to love. Murray Horowitz joins us to kick off our annual Summer Movie Festival. You can email your nominee for favorite villain to talk@npr.org. But first, the latest round of cyber attacks, what some describe as cyber war. If you've been affected by this attack, tell us about it. Or if you have questions, our phone number, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Evgeny Morozov has been following these reports on his blog for foreignpolicy.com. He's also a fellow at the Open Society Institute in New York and joins us from NPR's Bureau in New York City. Nice to have you with us today.
Thanks for inviting me.
And what do we know about these attacks?
Well, what we know is that several government websites in the U.S. Over the July 4th weekend have been struck. Some of them were not available for several days, even in some cases. And then we also know that several websites, some of them government websites, some of them private websites belonging to big private companies and newspapers in South Korea, were also hit. What we know is that the so-called botnet, this army of computers which have been hijacked to form the attack, is of relatively small scale. So normally we may not even feel the impact, but somehow, that we did. And this is what puzzles many of the cybersecurity experts, because normally the scale was very low and normally it wouldn't even be detected. So right now we don't really know where the attacks came from. All the speculation about potential North Korean involvement is just speculation. There is no tangible proof that North Korea was involved anyhow. And there is also a very interesting political game unfolding in South Korea itself, with several competing political parties basically blaming each other for invoking this North Korean threat. And that's all we know so far.
We know somebody did it, but you're saying we don't know who and we don't know why.
Yes, and I should also point out that the attacks right now are very easy to organize, so you and me could as well be behind them. You know, any individual sitting at home with a modest amount of cash and a very modest amount of computer knowledge can actually put together or rent in the open black market a botnet. So, you know, it could be North Korea, but it can as well be anyone who just had a grudge against the U.S. or against South Korea or just bored during the weekend.
It could have been North Korea. It could have been North Dakota.
Exactly.
All right. Let's see. We get a caller on the line. 800-989-8255 if you've been affected or if you have questions about this. Email is talk@npr.org. Landon is on the line from Wheaton, Maryland.
Hi, Neil.
Hi.
I'm an IT administrator, and I've had a little bit of experience with this issue, especially in the past week. But the thing that I found interesting was, as far as I understand, this is actually an old problem from an old worm probably from 3 or 4 years ago called MyDoom. And just recently it started to resurface again on unpatched servers. What is your speaker think about that?
Evgeny Mozarov?
Well, I think, you know, it is true that the virus which struck the machines which participated in the attack was actually detected and pretty well studied, a few years ago. And I think it's very interesting that given that this threat has been known for 3 or 4 years and the attacks were not really of a very big scale, it's still very surprising that the websites of the U.S. government couldn't withhold the attacks. So this is what I found very surprising, that, you know, with all this knowledge and with all this, potential funding that the U.S. government websites have, they still couldn't protect themselves. So this is something which I think is puzzling.
Now, Landon, how did it affect the websites that you're working with?
Well, I work for a communications company, and the communications company I was involved with, it was a personal computer that had all the data on it that I ended up having to completely wipe because it had become so infected, it just ceased to function. Mm-hmm. And so it probably cost him a couple $100s and some hours of labor, but on a large scale, this had been a large company, it could have easily cost millions of dollars and been a really serious problem. Mm-hmm. And it's such an unsophisticated attack. It's so simple. It's almost like the U.S. Army being attacked by people with sticks and stones, but they've just never bothered to do anything about it.
To build any defenses against sticks and stones.
Yeah, I mean, it's like they can shoot missiles and they've got bullets, but unfortunately the one thing that can kill them is this little rock that just destroys everything. I mean, it's a very simple attack to stop, but the U.S. government hasn't done anything to protect themselves.
Thanks very much, Landon. Appreciate the phone call. And Evgeny Morozov, let me ask you, is there anything... Why is there a connection being drawn to North Korea? You talked about South Koreans doing this for some political gain, but is the same virus attacking U.S. targets and South Korean targets?
Well, what happened is that there was a list of targets released yesterday by one of the South Korean computer security companies, which basically identified, I think, a few dozen websites, and half of them were in the United States, and the other half were in South Korea. And it's actually the first time that I know of that, two countries and two national, government web infrastructures were actually involved in the targets of the same botnet, right? And in South Korea, this is actually not very new. I mean, South Korean websites, government websites and private websites have been subjects of these attacks for years now. And there have been reports released by the South Korean Defense Forces and intelligence agencies almost every month saying that the number of attacks is increasing and potentially the attacks may be coming from North Korea. And there was a lot of speculation that there is this very secretive college in North Korea which basically trains very advanced and sophisticated hackers. So, again, none of that has been proved yet. And many South Korean politicians went on record basically saying that they do believe that North Korea was behind it. Mm. And the problem here is that South Korea is also trying to push a very strict anti-terrorism bill since 2001, actually. So there is a lot of debate in the country itself about whether there should be a more strict monitoring of private communications, email, cyberspace, and so forth. And it looks like, someone may have as well used the cyber attacks in South Korea and the U.S. just as an extra reason in order to push for that bill to finally goes through the parliament.
David Sanger, the chief Washington correspondent for the New York Times, wrote about the U.S. vulnerability and U.S. concern about cyber war in his book, The Inheritance, The World Obama Confronts and the Challenges to American Power. He joins us now from his office, from his home in Vermont. David, nice to have you back on the program.
Good to be with you, Neil.
And the U.S. takes this very seriously. You talked about a fascinating scene where in your book where the people prepping then President-elect Obama said, this is really what you need to worry about.
That's right. It was part of that set of briefings that Mike McConnell, the former head of the former director of national intelligence, gave to President Obama. But President Obama had also, during the campaign last year, held a full forum, policy forum on this issue. And then about a month and a half ago, issued this new cybersecurity initiative, which includes the eventual designation, no one's been designated yet, of a sort of cyber czar who would work out of the White House, just as you have an official on the National Security Council who focuses on Homeland Security, or another who focuses on proliferation and nuclear security and weapons of mass destruction. So it's been an increasing subject of concern. And I think what's most interesting about this last attack is, first, we don't know, what is it now, 5 days later, we still don't know where it comes from. That tells you something about our inability to deter these, even if a more sophisticated attack came along. And secondly, there's been discussion there could be a state sponsor, North Korea in this case, and absolutely no evidence of it. And that gives you an idea of the frustration of what it's like to deal with these as well.
And there are, you write in your book, this operates on two levels, of course, in terms of those operating on the practical level. One, trying to defend against it, and also trying to figure out what do you do if you do identify where it's coming from.
That's right. And one of the great difficulties that the Obama administration has run into in putting together its new policy is trying to explain in an unclassified fashion, and maybe even just trying to decide, how do you respond or threaten to respond to a cyber attack from a state actor, and what do you do about one from a non-state actor? So let me give you an example. Supposing you saw an attack gathering together on a server in China or in Russia. Couple of options you have. You could call the Chinese or the Russians and say, hey, what about this? But they'll probably say, we know nothing about it. You could go in electronically and try to destroy the code before it got released on you. But that's an act of cyber war yourself. And it's interesting that the Pentagon just a few weeks ago created for the first time a cyber command as part of strategic command. You could go in physically and, you know, bomb the server or attack it in some other way. But the nature of cyber attacks are that it could be written in one place and being served to you from someplace else. So you could have a Russian-made attack, for example, that comes out of a computer in Romania or maybe one in North Dakota, to use your example from a few minutes ago. So that becomes a very problematic way of getting at it. So this gets back to the old Bush-era question, when is preemption the right kind of strategy?
We're talking with David Sanger of The New York Times and with Evgeny Morozov of blogsforforeignpolicy.com. Talk more about cyber attacks in a moment, the scope of the threat, and what options are available. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The cyber attacks we saw this week against the Pentagon, the White House, Wall Street, and other targets are relatively minor. Still, many experts warn it's a sign of things to come and believe the government and business must do more to defend themselves. We're talking with Evgeny Morozov. He's been covering the latest attacks for foreignpolicy.com, and with David Sanger, chief Washington correspondent for The New York Times, who wrote about these issues in his book, The Inheritance, The World Obama Confronts and the Challenges to American Power. If you've been affected by this attack, tell us about it. Or if you have questions, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Just click on Talk of the Nation. And let's see if we get another caller on the line. This is Paul. Paul with us from Cincinnati.
Yeah. It seems like North Korea is just becoming more aggressive. What do you think some of the some of the reasons is why they've really wanted to really provoke us more? Do you think they think we're vulnerable right now because we're occupied with two wars?
Well, again, there's been no evidence that North Korea is necessarily behind this, other than the suggestions from South Korea. And as Evgeny Morozov says, there are reasons South Korea might want to say that. But certainly North Korea has been provocative. They've just tested another nuclear weapon and been firing off ballistic missiles.
Sure. But again, I think, you know, if you try to think strategically, it may as well be that some, you know, very aggressive politicians in South Korea, you know, decided to time the attacks, you know, to the missile test. You know, I think right now it's more or less, you know, guesswork. Again, just to give an example how easy it is to launch cyber attacks on, you know, government websites, we should all remember that, you know, 2 weeks ago, quite a lot of Americans were actually launching cyber attacks on their own, on the governments belonging to the Iranian government and the Iranian news agencies, you know, and sharing tips on how to do it via Twitter. I mean, there is nothing sophisticated about launching an attack on pro-government website. You know, all you have to do is basically turn your computer, you know, you can do it voluntarily, you don't have to be injected or by malware, to turn your computer into a zombie and then, you know, make sure that it sends traffic to, you know, your target website. So I think right now, unless we have any evidence that North Korea is behind it, it's very hard to draw any conclusions. And, you know, one more thing we should like to add is that the kind of attack that has struck the websites in the U.S. and in South Korea is what's called denial of service attack, which basically means that the website which is being hit is becoming very slow and often unresponsive and often unavailable. So to launch such an attack, what you need is you know, thousands of computers which are all launching this attack simultaneously. And in most cases, these computers are scattered around the world. Right, so some of them may be in South Korea, some of them may be in Russia, some of them may be in Brazil, but there are thousands of them. So even if you manage to pinpoint one computer, it doesn't really tell you anything about the origin of the attack, because, you know, that computer may have been hijacked and, you know, just been infected with a virus. Right, so what you do need to identify is what's called a command and control center. And this is a computer which is basically giving directions, you know, to other computers in the army. And they are becoming very sophisticated. So now, you know, if one command and control center has been disabled, modern botnets identify the next command and control center, you know, and that role goes to that computer in the network. So it's extremely hard to pinpoint the original source and the actual computer commanding the attack. So it's very hard to talk about attribution.
Thanks, Paul.
Yep.
Here's an email from Tom in Denver, Colorado. What forensic effort will likely be undertaken to ascertain the source of the attacks? What's the likelihood that they would pinpoint the source? David Sanger, there are lots of people in the Pentagon and elsewhere who will be working on this.
I'm sure there will. And, you know, as was just pointed out, this is the kind of attack you sort of least worry about. You know, even on the U.S. government websites, what's being attacked are the public portion of these websites. And of course, there's no way to fully defend those websites against the kind of denial of service attack that we've been hearing about, because these websites are only useful if they're out there and accessible to the public. Now, the Pentagon, all of the government agencies also have non-public websites, which the effort is to try to wall those off from this kind of attack. Some days those efforts are useful. Some days people with a lot more sophistication than those who launched this manage to pierce those. And that's really what you hear the government most worried about. It's not the public websites. It's the non-public one. Same thing in the private sector. As for the forensics of this, you know, if a nuclear weapon went off in an American city, God forbid, it would probably take weeks or months to figure out what the origin of the weapon was. Same thing can hold true in the case of an attack of this kind, because as we discussed before, it's so easy to route them through sort of false servers that getting back to the true origin is very difficult.
Well, let's get Yang on the line. Yang with us from San Jose.
Hi. I saw the firsthand the cyber attacks in Korea when our business I was working for a company that was building this what we call anti-DOS product, and the height of the attack was in 2007-2008 timeframe, and the attacks were actually happening inside Korea. Command and controller, we call it command and controller, they were all located somewhere in China or in Russia. And they will just issue a command, and they have this huge botnet inside Korea, and they're launching attacks in the magnitude of tens and twenties gigabits per second. Those are massive attacks, and they were already happening in Korea in 2007-2008 timeframe.
And you're saying these were the command and control centers were in Russia and China?
Well, we suspected that command and controllers, these are just, could be one individual, could be from government, we're not sure, but they were all, and they're really hard to trace, too, and they make sure that they hide really well. They were outside Korea, but, I mean, 10 and 20 gigabits per second, that sort of massive attack, because the internet link between Korea and China and Korea and Russia are very small, there's no way they could have launched this big attack from China and Russia.
Mm-hmm.
They have a botnet. They infected pieces in Korea, and they just issue command, and they start attacking these websites.
And Evgeny Morozov, remind us, these botnets that Yang is talking about, these are just your computer, my computer, and your next-door neighbor's computer that are recruited without anybody knowing about it.
Yes, I mean, by some estimates, there are actually, you know, from 15 to 20 computers which are connected to the Internet are at one point part of a botnet, right? So more or less, you know, the very conservative estimate is that, you know, every fifth computer that is online has been part of a botnet. But again, just to comment on what has just been said, you know, the modern generation of botnets, they actually have a very interesting decentralized structure that when you go and identify the control center and you disable it, you know, another computer, which was just a regular soldier in that cyber army, becomes the new command and control center and becomes a general and then gives directions. So, you know, you essentially have to go after every single computer, and that's just, you know, impractical. And just to, you know, to comment on what David said earlier, it's actually often the websites of the private sector. For example, websites which facilitate online banking, for example, which are often the targets of this DDoS attacks, because, you know, we all could probably survive the July 4th weekend without the website of the State Department, but it would be impossible to survive it without your local banking service.
So
if,
Bank
you know,
of America,
the chase,
yes,
of Bank
exactly.
of America was down, that would have a significant cost on the economy. And that's actually what happened in Estonia 2 years ago, when the country's national online banking, you know, infrastructure was crippled for, you know, a significant period of time, thus basically halting the economy. And this is where it gets really scary.
Mm. Yang, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And let's go next to Brian. Brian with us from Birmingham, Alabama.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to comment on the other side of it. I keep hearing that these attacks are like just a nuisance for the websites they hit. But working for a private company that hosts applications on the Internet, we were actually infected by a virus last week. And one of the real costs of these attacks are lowering our bandwidth. So our clients get a slower system, so really we have to stop our work and kind of lower our private company's productivity just to clear them of the viruses. So while the websites getting hit are just kind of slowed down to a nuisance,
mm-hmm.
we're actually, our business is shut down while we're cleaning that up.
And how much did that cost you?
You know, I really couldn't put a number on it, but a lot of man hours, you know, physically from computer to computer, scanning, removing, and cleaning. So, you know, it definitely is a huge nuisance in the private sector.
All right, Brian, thanks very much.
That was all. Thanks.
Appreciate the reminder for that. Let's see if we go next to Charles. Charles is with us from Chesterfield in Missouri.
Howdy. Interesting timing coming after the call for a cyber czar, and Goldman Sachs lost serious money in computer trading. And so will this help funnel billions of dollars more into the National Security Agency?
David Sanger?
Well, very good question. There has been a battle underway within the U.S. government for a number of years, and it certainly reached its height during the Bush administration, on the question of who controls the American defenses against cyber attacks. The Homeland Security Department said, well, of course we do, because these are attacks on the homeland. The Pentagon said, well, we should. This is cyber war. If it's got war in it, that's our business. We do war. The National Security Agency is the agency that has probably the most talent within the U.S. government for dealing with these things because, of course, they are the ones monitoring a number of these sites around the world, thousands, hundreds of thousands of them. And so the thought was that they should move from being a purely a listening post kind of agency to one that might also be a major player in American offensive cyber counterattacks. And in the end.
And we're having a little difficulty with the computerized system we're talking to David Sanger with. Have we cleaned that up? We'll get him back on the line in just a minute. He's back. David, are you there with us?
I can hear you. Can
okay.
You hear me?
Yeah, we just had a little glitch there. You were looping.
Okay. Sorry about that. You know, must be our own personal cyber attack.
Indeed.
Right? Yes. Was that now it looks like the National Security Agency is going to take a major role, but the major coordination of all these roles is going to be within the White House.
We're probably hacked by the Washington Post. David Sanger, of course, the chief Washington correspondent for the New York Times. He's with us from his home in Vermont. We're also talking with Evgeny Morozov, who's a blogger for foreignpolicy.com and a fellow at the Open Society Institute in New York. He's at our bureau in New York. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. And this is all coming to you from Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can go next to Becky. Becky calling from San Francisco.
Hi, I just wanted to make a comment that it's really important to keep in mind that these types of distributed denial of service attacks on public websites are really just acts of cyber vandalism. This is someone trying to get attention, trying to get some street cred within the community to say, hey, I took down an important public website. And the reason that's important to recognize is that they get more media attention when they tie in a current news story or a current element of the news, and I'm talking about North Korea. So it's very possible that that subterfuge by bringing in South Korea, North Korea, to get more media attention.
And when you say public websites, you also mean the public websites of government agencies, for example. But Evgeny Morozov, could you be right?
Well, of course. I mean, actually, I agree with a lot of it. I just think that there are particular moments when even public websites have a strategic role. So when, for example, last year, there was a series of cyber attacks on the websites of the Georgian government. And at that time, Georgia was fighting a war with Russia. So Georgia essentially couldn't get its story to the outside world because much of its web infrastructure was simply down and unavailable. Right. So I think, and again, then you have websites which are basically private websites which are making a living by being online. So the business of cyber extortion, for example, right now is huge. So websites which, for example, do betting, which may be illegal in some countries, but you know there are still websites which take bets around particular, for example, sporting events. So now there is an actual business with cyber gangs launching denial of service attacks or threatening to launch denial of service attacks unless they pay the ransom before a big interest in a certain sporting event, for example. Mm-hmm. And some of those ransoms range in $50,000-$60,000, right? So you either pay up or your website becomes unavailable and you lose even more money because people are unable to bet or people are unable to access some other kind of sensitive financial information, for example. Oh. So I think it is more, in some cases, it is more than just vandalism. It actually carries significant economic and geopolitical cost as well.
Could be a cyber protection racket, in a sense, is what you're saying. Becky,
it is happening, yes.
Yeah, Becky, thanks very much for the call. Let's see if we can go next to David. David with us from Forsyth, Indiana.
Hi. I have a quick question. If the Pentagon ever gets attacked by a cyber attack from an individual from another country, and we come to find out that it was an individual instead of a government, does our government pressure another government into punishing the person that did the original attack?
David Sanger?
Great question. The Pentagon gets attacked every day. There have been attacks on the office of the Secretary of Defense's own computer systems, many other computer systems. Some of these are just probes to find weaknesses. Some of them are actual attacks. But one of the big issues is, what do you do with a non-state actor? If it's an individual, yes, probably yes for it to criminal prosecution. But supposing it's a terror group operating in a country that has no effective government. Say it was Somalia, say it was Yemen, someplace, say it was Afghanistan, someplace where there's no way that the government could act against the group. Then you get into a much more complex and murky area of whether or not the U.S. launches an attack on another country's computer systems, even if it wasn't state-sponsored.
Of course, some of those places, you'd have to look for the places where they have electricity.
Well, that's one of the reasons the North Korea story here is a little bit hard to believe, just because there are so few computers in North Korea and the country is so cut off from the web.
What about that mysterious university that Evgeny Morozov was talking about?
You know, I am certain that the North Koreans probably try to train people to go do this. The North Koreans also are very good at counterfeiting currency and so forth and so on. But having a training capability and then having an ability for the state to actually go out and launch a sophisticated attack are two very different things.
David Sanger, thanks for your time today. We appreciate your breaking away from your vacation there in Vermont.
No problem. Good to be with you, Neil.
David Sanger, Chief Washington Correspondent for The New York Times. Also with us, Evgeny Morozov, a blogger for foreignpolicy.com, a fellow at the Open Society Institute in New York. Thank you for your time today.
Thanks for having me.